Have you seen this? This guy, he's an American guy. I saw it on Instagram. Basically had this can of Sir Ceramic and he opened it in his car and it exploded. And he was like dry retching. And then it was all over his car. And then he was like, what am I going to do with my car? Like,
sell it.
Burn it, probably.
Life in the land of the ice and snow. My name is Heather, and today my guest is Sarah from Australia. Hello,
hi.
Sarah.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm pretty good. We were talking about the fall weather and that it's like, it's between cold and hot because the apartments and buildings have started to warm up a bit in anticipation for the cold. And it's a little too hot inside. It's a little too cold outside.
But actually, it's one of my favorite seasons. There's only four to choose from. But in Australia, we don't really have autumn, as we call it. We don't really have, well, definitely where I'm from, because we don't have the same types of trees. We don't have the same kind of transition in between seasons. So
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. So autumn in Australia is a little bit of like, oh, it's just a bit colder now. And it's not really that much like of a transition per se. So I actually really love autumn.
Yeah. So you don't have a lot of trees that have like leaf changing colors.
No, a lot of the native trees are, yeah, I should know this, but you know, they're from the eucalypt family and so they're not deciduous. And obviously in parts of Australia which have been colonized, or well, all of Australia has been colonized, but in the cities where they were colonized first, then they mainly have these trees, but they're kind of in botanical gardens or parks.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not like on the streets like it is in Sweden where there's leaves, gloriously colored leaves everywhere.
It's gorgeous right now. I just keep wanting to take pictures everywhere I go. Yeah. I dread the winter coming, but it is beautiful in the fall here.
Yeah, this is really nice. It's also these nice sunny days, clear sunny days. So
yes,
you can enjoy
when you know
them.
That the darkness is coming. It's a theme on my podcast. I can't shut up about the darkness.
I think it's still quite shocking. Even so, I've been here 9 years and I still feel shocked. But then I speak to my Swedish friends and they're also shocked.
Yes. I don't think you ever grow out of it, even if you grew up here.
Which to me indicates that it's not a natural state of being for humans.
I agree.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And I'm always saying, why did the Vikings settle here? I get that maybe they came in the spring or the summer, but once that winter hit, it should have been like, nope.
Yeah, let's head south. We've got the tools to overrun people. Why not? Yeah.
Why didn't they stay when they overran people? Don't take stuff and go back. Just stay there.
Yeah, like, very strange kind of societal model.
Yes.
Yeah, very strange.
But okay, so you've been here for 9 years.
Yeah.
But what brought you here originally?
Okay, so most people come for love or for work. But we were living in London and it was either like, oh, should we go to Australia? My husband was really keen on that. I should have taken him up on that then when
and
I had the
so
chance.
So your husband is not Australian?
And he's not Swedish. He's British.
Okay.
So we were living in London. We had a baby and, you know, London is amazing when you're building your career and when you have lots of time and not when you have a kid. And so we actually moved to Sweden for the work-life balance, for the social values. So it was a really conscious decision. It wasn't like, oh, let's just follow somebody that I like or I've got a job offer, and most certainly not for the weather. So it was really a conscious decision about where do we think would suit our values politically, ethically, morally, you know,
right,
professionally.
Well, were you nervous though about the language?
Yes and no, because I had kind of been reassured by some friends of ours who, you know, we had a friend and he's from Northern Ireland and she's Swedish and he's fluent in Swedish. And he was like, yeah, it's no problems. You just come and you go to lessons, you learn. Yeah, that hasn't happened for me.
Not everybody processes languages the same way.
Yeah. So I kind of maybe was given some false hope. So that's another, yeah, that's probably a whole podcast in itself, the trauma of language learning.
Oh, yeah. So what have you tried so far?
What have I tried? So if you come to Sweden with a baby, you can't go to SFE because you can't take a baby to SFE, which is a huge issue for me because then you exclude women and particularly women on parental leave. So I think that that's another problem. Then, so I tried SFE after my daughter started for schooler. Then I became pregnant again and same problem again. Once you have a baby, you can't go to SFE. And then pretty much directly after that, I started working. Then I have done SFE by distance. I've studied at Folk University. Mm-hmm. I've had private lessons. I have done a lot and it doesn't stick very well.
I totally understand this. This took me a very long time and I'm still not 100%. I'm at 90%.
Wow.
I make a lot of grammatical mistakes.
I'd be happy with 50.
You say wow, but it's almost 25 years that I've lived here now.
I think people underestimate. I work with language and because I'm a writer and I work in communication. So for me, language is really important. So I think maybe that's a barrier.
Yes.
Because you feel like, oh, I don't want to be the one making all of these mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I know other people, they just say it. They don't care if they make a mistake.
It's really the way to do it, but it's hard to get past that barrier.
Yeah.
I'm the same way. I also work in writing, so I want to be correct when I speak. Even though I'm very forgiving to anybody else speaking English, and it doesn't matter to me if they make
Absolutely.
Grammatical mistakes or things like that. But for myself, I feel like I have to get it right every time.
But I think Swedes are a tough audience. I mean, as an English speaker, I think it's a global language, but it's also a language that's spoken by a lot of non-native speakers. And Swedes, I think, are just kind of getting used to that. It's a relatively new phenomena for them, in my mind, compared to, say, what it is for, you know, people who speak English. Whereas if somebody says something to me in English and it's totally grammatically incorrect and it's all upside down, you know, we can work it out.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't say, oh, well, that's not how you say it. If they said something to me that was completely like would get them into trouble or was offensive,
sure.
then I would say, oh, hey, you know, you can't really say it like that. But, you know, I never say things like that. I say words in Swedish and people know what I'm saying,
but
they have to
you.
Correct you. And mm-hmm. I feel like saying, you don't need to correct me. As long as you understand me, we're good here.
Right.
And I actually had to have this conversation with my kids because they were also picking up this really bad habit of saying, oh, don't say that. You're not getting it right. And so I just said, you know, you are the children of two immigrants. So you have to accept that we are not going to know the language. And then I also said to them, don't be mean and horrible to people who can't speak a language, particularly a second language, because they're trying and they are here because of many different reasons. I said, you're going to hear people speaking Swedish with mistakes or with accents. You're going to hear people speaking English with accents and making mistakes. So, you know, be kind and accept that.
I feel like unless I've asked the person to please let me know if I've said something,
yeah.
then, yeah, I don't really enjoy being criticized. Or some people have the mindset that they're trying to help. I understand where they're coming from. But for me, it makes me less willing to speak Swedish
yeah.
or another language when I'm just being corrected all the time. Then, of course, self-confidence is going to go down. And I think that's something a lot of people don't understand. I've tried to take that in for myself sometimes if somebody's really making strong mistakes in English where other people maybe aren't understanding in a business situation. I found sometimes a good thing is just to repeat what they've
yeah,
said.
Exactly.
You know, instead of criticizing them, if they say, I want a sandwich, and then I'll be, oh yeah, you want a sandwich? Okay, well, we can go get one over here.
Exactly. There's ways to do it in which is like mindful that person might be embarrassed or
right.
it might not their confidence. And
But still
yeah.
saying, I understand you just
yeah,
fine.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And I think that for me is maybe because of our occupations that you feel like you have to get it right. I often say to people after I've been speaking to them in Swedish for like 10 minutes and I say, you know, I'm really clever at English.
Yes. I really am smart.
Yeah, it's just the language that I'm dumb in.
Yeah. Well, my husband, he's Swedish and he speaks English so well that you forget sometimes. But he's expressed to me, I wish that you understood how clever and funny I am in Swedish as compared to English. And I'm like, but you're super clever and funny. He's like, I'm even better in my natural language.
So. And I think this is really interesting because when you live somewhere where there is a language difference, you're always dealing with people in a way that's not a natural. You're not always on the same level. Someone is obviously always going to be in a superior position.
Right.
From a language or communication point of view. And I totally get that. I often thank my colleagues at work after a meeting or something. I say, oh, thank you so much for speaking in English. I really appreciate it because I'm always in awe of them just flipping, because I certainly can't do that.
Finally, I've gotten to the point where the conversation goes faster. Now that I can understand Swedish so well, the conversation goes faster sometimes if they speak Swedish and I speak English. Otherwise, they're having to wait a long time for me to formulate my sentence correctly.
Absolutely. It's the waiting. It's the brain processing time. I feel like I'm in one of those computers from the 80s and they're in, like, you know, their AI.
Yes. Yeah. I'm on dial-up.
Yeah, exactly. You have to wait for me.
Well, talking about how you're a writer, let's talk some more about that. Were you doing this before you moved to Sweden? Is this a new thing?
Not really. Oh, okay. No, I've always worked in communications and PR and things like that. And actually, I started out as a journalist, so writing's always been there. But I hadn't really kind of had thought about writing. But it's always, I think when you work in this environment, maybe you always think about writing. I actually just recently said to my husband, oh, when I lived in Dublin, I submitted a poem to some competition and it was shortlisted. And he was like, what? You never told me that. And I was like, oh, that was 100 years ago. So writing's always been there for me. But I think when I came to Sweden, there was a particular loss and sadness that I was feeling. And that maybe prompted me to write a bit more. But then actually my colleagues that I write and publish books with, they are language teachers and they write books for different reasons. So we have our different reasons for writing. But actually the end of it is really to kind of explore the ideas of otherness and explore the ideas of language and culture. And that's kind of been a really good avenue for me. And I hope that it's also a good avenue for other people to understand those experiences. Yeah.
Right. Well, you can go ahead and tell me some of your books and plug them a bit.
Okay. So I haven't written a lot of books, but we publish a lot of books. So we have a very small company and we're called Lys. It's a Swedish word, L-Y-S. And I can't say it very well. So it's very bad. It's my company. But it's really small. There are only three of us. And we basically publish books, as I said, around language and culture, the Swedish language and Swedish culture, and how other people are experiencing that. Either they might be Swedish and they are maybe experiencing the culture from a different perspective, or primarily it's non-native Swedes and maybe the writing about how they experience the language or how they experience it from a cultural point of view. So we kind of like just work with authors and flesh out these ideas. And some of the books we've written, they're also a bit of tongue-in-cheek sometimes. We right. have a book called We Can English, and this is written by a guy called Paddy Kelly. And Paddy has lived in, he's Irish and he's lived in Sweden for 20 years, and he's been seeing all the really terrible English that's been written.
Oh, yes. He's been on the podcast, yeah, actually. You know, and Paddy, I follow him, and he's very good at pointing out a lot of advertisements where the English is not quite right.
Yeah, so kind of circling back then, I guess, you know, when we say we don't correct people, that's fine. But when you're going to stick it on a billboard, try and get it right.
Yes.
Yeah. So we worked with another author called Thomas Bragnilsson, and he basically was looking to do his to get his citizenship. And he'd been talking to people about what it means to be Swedish. And so he put out a call on what was then Twitter and said, what does it mean to be Swedish for you? And he got all these responses back. And so what he did is he wanted to try all of these things before he got his citizenship. So
what a great idea.
Yeah. So, you know, ranging from like reading a particular book to watching a particular movie, eating particular food, or like going to a certain place or doing a certain activity. So that was really interesting as well, because this concept of what it is to be a nationality is very different for each person. So through our books, we kind of talk about these type of issues. And on the other side, my colleagues, Emil and Sophie, they're both Swedish. They work with texts and language resources to help people moving to Sweden in particular professions. So to advance their language training in particular sectors. So it could be like the energy sector or the architecture sector. So they work with agencies and organizations to help professionals as well to advance their Swedish language.
That's very important, because something I think a lot of people don't think about is, okay, when we learn Swedish, we are learning your everyday Swedish.
Absolutely.
But then say you have to go to the doctor, you have, you know, some sort of emergency, something's wrong with your knee. What are the medical terms? These are things you don't learn in a regular class. Say you have a legal issue. What are the legal terms? And so it's very important to have extra Swedish help. This is really great that they do that.
So their resources, it could be for you obviously could read them, but they're also for people who move here and, you know, they want to work in that profession as well, because that's a whole other language. It's, you know, when you're at work and people are talking about a topic and you don't have the vocabulary for it, it's a whole new world. And people say, oh, you should just get them to speak in Swedish in meetings. And I'm like, yeah, but in my line of work, we could be talking about anything from mining to life sciences, I don't know all right. the words for that.
If you're talking about every day, sure, we could give it a try. But
if you want me to buy some fruit and veg, I'm all good. Yes. But
I found it very funny because I moved here in my early 20s and I find myself not knowing English words for things that I never did before I moved here. Like I had children in Sweden. Okay. I'd never had children in the US. And certain words that go with having a baby and all the medical things around that, I'm lost on because I only learned them in Swedish.
Yeah.
Because I never had the experience in the
and
US.
Some of them so don't it goes exist.
Back. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm trying to say like barnmorska and it's baby doctor. I guess there's
and I think you, probably from the US you probably don't have the term either because
it's not the same as
midwife.
Your...
And that's very like kind of British kind of way of approaching childbirth. Whereas I think in America you have more of a doctor led.
Exactly.
So the
so
term,
it doesn't
concept...
translate well if you're American trying to explain to other Americans. And if you say, oh no, it's a midwife, they have this idea in their heads that this is from the 1800s and they're scrubbing up, you know, in your kitchen and they're going to help you at home or something.
They don't see
we have
medical...
different connotations
absolutely.
For this. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting, isn't it? I have a friend whose mom moved away when she was 17 from Sweden, exactly the same problem. So she doesn't know Swedish words for all the things that come in adult life. I left Australia when I was 24, so I've never worked in Australia in my profession or anything. I mean, I would hope I would know some of them, but I wouldn't know like all the cultural practices. So that's another thing on top of the language is like, okay, I've only really worked in Europe. So how do I know, how would I navigate those working relationships and, you know, what are the norms in a totally different culture?
Of course. And I mean, business culture is also quite different from place to place.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if I could navigate that either. Most of the jobs I had before I moved were working at the mall or department stores or something. But for serious offices like I do here in Sweden, it's very lax and it's very informal. I know that that's not the case in a lot of other countries. Would I fit in if I had to go back and work in an office environment in the US or in the UK? I don't know that I would be very good at knowing the etiquette or being serious.
Yeah, or not taking your 6 weeks holiday.
Oh, I know. How do people survive?
Well, I actually got caught up on a thread on LinkedIn recently about this and somebody had posted, oh, how do you organize your PTO, which I think is paid time off.
Yeah.
And I had always been under the impression that in the US, the 10 days holiday was holidays. I didn't know that that also included your sick days.
Mm-hmm.
I was just blown away. I kind of was just like, what the actual...
Yeah.
Because how does a human being survive on 10 days annual leave / sickness? And there were so many Europeans who jumped onto this thread. It wasn't just me. And that was really interesting because like, if you're thinking about a culture like moving back and forth, that would be impossible for me to deal with.
Right. Well, the worst thing that I found out, and this may only be in certain situations, but I have a friend and when her child was sick, she had to take her own sick vacation days.
Yes.
Well, to take, which she did not. Yeah, probably a total. I think she had 5 vacation and 5 sick days. Swedes always laugh at because they're like, how would you know you're only going to be sick for 5 days? It's like, yeah, I know. And so if you don't have a good support system around you or somebody, you know, a grandparent or something who can take in your child when they're sick, what are you supposed to do? You have to take time off of work for that. And it's not like, I mean, over here, we have things you can fill out. You still get, you know, a portion of your pay if you have to take off with your child. You just do the paperwork, no problem. It does not cut into your sick days. It does not cut into your vacation days. And we don't even have a limited number of sick days here.
No, I mean, Australia, there is some, you know, there is like an allocated amount and you can carry them over if you don't use them. So some people end up accruing like, you know, 40 sick days and they're like, oh yeah, I'm on sick leave. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting. So each country has a different kind of approach. But I feel like, okay, that to me would be an absolute barrier. Like when you said, why did you move here? Well, I definitely wouldn't be moving to the US for that reason.
Oh,
sorry,
no.
Stateside listeners.
Yeah,
but I think like the culture, that working culture is quite different if you when you've been moving around.
I think so too. Also, at least in my experience, I've noticed the thing about showing up at certain hours. And I suppose this is different in different jobs, of course, in Sweden, but I'm talking about just your basic office jobs. You don't have to be 9 o'clock sharp and wait until it's exactly 5 to leave. People all the time would be like, oh, my kid's got this thing at daycare, so I got to leave at 3 today. Okay, cool. As long as you're not doing it all the time, or the train's messed up again, I'll be in at like 9:30, sometimes 10, or it's fine. As long as you're a good worker, you're getting your work done. Nobody is really that touchy about times.
I think for me, when I think about the working kind of environment, is that I do feel that you're treated more like an adult.
Yes.
And I think that is like without this kind of micromanaging, or I need to see you be here to make sure you're doing something. I work with, in my job, I do a lot of work around promoting Sweden and talking about Sweden from a talent attraction kind of perspective. And what's really interesting, and I use this statistic because I think it's super interesting, that Sweden actually has really super high productivity in relation to GDP, for example.
Right.
So actually giving people time off doesn't mean they're less productive, actually means they're more productive, because they're like, I find Swedes work, I work really hard here.
Oh yeah.
You kind of earn your time off. And then when you have your time off, you're off. And I think that's amazing. But I think like in the UK, I lived in the UK for 10 years. And I think like there's a lot of presenteeism. People are at work, but they're really not at work.
Right.
There's a lot of tea breaks. Tea breaks. And people say, oh, Swedes take fika. I'm sorry, the Brits have that one sewn up. Absolutely. They drink
I've never
a lot
worked
of tea.
There, so yeah, I don't know how extreme that is.
There's a tea break. Oh, who'd like a cup of tea? You know, and so Swedes have a little, the fika culture is a bit more structured.
Yeah, I think so. It's usually once a day, usually.
Yeah.
And 15 to 30 minutes, you know, and you're talking to your coworkers. I think it's good, like team cooperation, getting to know people. It's always tell somebody if you're starting a job, if you're new to Sweden, when they say it's a fika, go take part in this. This is also part of the work thing. So you get to know your coworkers better.
Absolutely.
On not just a work level. And
even if you don't drink tea or coffee like me, you still need to go and take the break, because actually that's a part of the, the cultural interaction.
It is. It's part of fitting in, really. Yeah. And yeah, you don't have to take the sweets if you're not eating sweets. You don't have to have coffee or tea. Just go and sit down. You don't even have to have water. Just go and sit down. It's part of taking a break and being a little bit social.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever been challenged on why I'm not taking a tea or coffee or the cake. I think that's actually quite good. I haven't really come across people being like, oh, you should have something.
Right.
So that's quite nice. It's not like, oh, you should have a drink. Why don't you have it?
Yeah.
If you just say no, they're like, okay, that's okay. Because they're not the prying type.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I agree. That's something definitely about Swedes. They are not the prying type.
They're kind of on the way or the other extreme.
Yeah, sometimes you'd actually like them to ask a little bit more.
Aren't you interested? Talk to me.
Yeah. So since you're so much about studying the Swedish culture for your work, I'm going to guess maybe you have some good tips for Sweden, for Stockholm. What are some things you like to do?
So I'm probably the worst person to ask this to, because we hang out in our little area.
What is your area?
I live in northwest Stockholm in a suburb called Bromma.
Oh, yes.
And you can't say Bromma. You have to say Bromma. It's very important for people
so
to understand.
That down.
You know, what I find really interesting is the access to nature.
Yes.
So we live about 10 kilometers from Stockholm Center. When I lived in London, we lived 10 kilometers from the center of London.
Mm-hmm.
It couldn't be any further apart in terms of experience. So we have a lake at the end of our road. We have forests. And so one of the things that actually, for me, is about being connected to nature. And being in Sweden, I have really slowed kind of, I guess, my pace down.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been a city person. Absolutely. I would definitely consider myself a city person. But the last few times I've been back to London, I've thought, this is too much. So actually for me, being in nature, accessing forests, just going for a walk, you don't need to plan anything. I don't think Sweden's a place that has a lot of like great activities or like places to go or destinations. It's not like a tourist city, I don't think, where it's like, okay, you have the Opera House and you have like Sydney Harbour Bridge, or you have the Eiffel Tower, or you have loads of museums. I think for me, it's more like my friend was over here from Australia last summer and we hired some kayaks or canoes and we went around the city centre on the water.
Mm-hmm.
And actually my husband and I have done that a few times, and you can do that locally near my house, you know, or we went for a big long couple of hour walk in a forest in Tyresta. So actually I don't see Stockholm as a place. It's a great place for a weekend, go to bars, go to restaurants. But for me, it's more really about the nature. it doesn't sound that exciting. Maybe if people want like a real buzz, and I'm sure the city has that, but you know, I'm a middle-aged woman with small kids, so the forest is where we hang.
Hey, the forest is free, so
yeah. And it's also, you know, going back to the change of seasons, it offers something different all year round.
That's,
you know,
right.
We can swim in the lake in the summer, but we can also walk on the lake in the winter when it's frozen and people are ice skating on it. And
yes.
I mean, that's pretty special.
I really like that about the changing seasons here. I'm like you, I didn't have too many seasons changing in Texas.
Yeah.
I mean, it does get cold, but it doesn't stay cold for very long. And it's not all of this dramatic kind of colors and
yeah.
such a big difference. So it's the same to me. And I can also appreciate that there's completely different activities depending on. I even keep a little list for myself when people come. Things to do in Stockholm in the summer. Things to do in Stockholm in
yeah,
the winter.
Because it's a different city.
It really is.
Yeah, yeah, the things that you would do like in the summer, they just don't have the same impact, or they're just physically like not very fun. I mean, we go skiing and in the summer we go bike riding, and it is really more about, I've always been a pretty active person anyway. So, but I think maybe Stockholm does lend itself to that as a city, which is quite unusual.
It is, actually. And it's something I do love about the summer in Stockholm is everyone is outside.
Absolutely.
People are having picnics. People, you can swim in the city in so many places. People just want to be out in nature, you know, the nature reserves. You'll see a lot of people, but not overcrowded. It's
no,
still,
and not,
I mean,
talking to you. Don't go crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. No. It's still pretty quiet. You can enjoy everything. And nobody's, you know, they'll just give you a little nod if
yeah,
they,
exactly.
they pass you. There's
yeah.
no chatting. So you can be at one with nature.
Yeah, don't come to Sweden for the chat.
No. I think people have learned that by now.
Yeah, maybe they have. But I mean, there's still, I worked with some younger colleagues and they're always out and about in town. And I understand, you know, that there's loads of things to do in the city. But for me, I don't see Stockholm as that's the draw for me.
Mm.
Because it's such a, everything is so close to nature, which I absolutely love. I'm a water person. So being
yeah.
able to see the water, every kind of turn.
I really like that.
Yeah.
I think people who haven't been here don't understand Stockholm is a city made up of islands. So water everywhere.
Yeah. And actually, I think that has some kind of calming influence. There's something about water. I mean, most cities have water. It might be a river going through it or, you know, it's on a coast or, but there's something really special about Stockholm is that you kind of turn a corner and you don't realize, oh, there's more water, but it's not connected to, well, it is connected, but it's kind of different to, you're not walking along a river per se.
Right.
Or a beach.
It's not just one area and one type.
Yeah, it's very, you know, it's kind of weaving. You can be on this part of the city and see water, and then you can look out a building window and see something and get on a ferry or get on a boat or take a kayak. And yeah, that's quite unique.
We need to start wrapping it up.
Yeah, okay.
But I have one question. It's probably going to be a little difficult. So this is going to air in November.
Yes.
What are your plans for November in Stockholm? Because I find that to be one of the most difficult times of year to find anything I like to do. Because we talk about the nice fall walks, but once we hit November, it's starting to get a lot darker. Leaves aren't as pretty anymore. What do you typically do that time of year?
Okay, so November is a very difficult month for me. It's my birthday.
Oh, well, that's something to look forward to, really.
No, it's not, because I come from Australia, and November in Australia is the beginning of summer.
Oh,
it's
no.
fantastic. It's the end of the school year or the study year. People are kind of ramping up for Christmas. Sweden kind of sucks in
yeah.
November. It really sucks. So I haven't really celebrated my birthday since I've been in Sweden because it's been so crappy. I really struggle with November. So this year, actually, we're going to Florida.
That's the best tip of all.
Leave Sweden.
Yes. What should you do in November, January and February? Leave Sweden. It's
yeah, absolutely.
Top tip.
I mean, one year in October, we went to the Canaries. But, you know, you can't even ski in November.
No, it's not quite winter yet either.
No,
it's just in between.
Yeah, and people do start putting up their lights. But basically, my tip for November is to get out.
Perfect. I think that's a good note to end on.
Leave Sweden.
Yeah,
that's the note. No, but they come back in December because then all the lights are out and it's beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I said you need to get out November, January, and February. December, I say December's a good month to be here. Christmas markets, beautiful lights, hopefully some snow.
Yeah.
It's a nice cozy feeling in December. The rest of the months, no.
No, skip it.
Yeah.
Perfect.